of postmodernism. And some of you in the little interval said, I guess I'm about 50% modern and about 50% postmodern. Well, I think that expresses how probably many of us feel, that we recognize part of the modern view in ourselves, but we do also more or less sense that we have some postmodern streaks in us. That does not have too much to do with age. It has to do with all kinds of other factors, probably. There are people, however, within our own church community who are still very, very modern. And then again, there are people who are almost 100% postmodern. And you can imagine that it is difficult to make these worlds meet. But the first step would have to be that we understand that this is the situation. Because if you don't recognize it, then you just throw up your hands in bewilderment and say, well, these other people don't understand me. But we see that in the Seventh-day Adventist Church, like in most other organizations, most other churches in our part of the world, postmodernism has made its inroads. There are some people who feel that that is a good thing, or at least that is something that should not threaten us, whereas others feel that this is, well, is it the beginning of the end, or at least it's something terrible. When I look at the country where we come from, we find a large immigrant population in the church. Most of that immigrant population is thoroughly modern. That is what they bring with them. Many of their peers in the church where they come are quite postmodern. And so that causes enormous difficulties in communication and cooperation. In the church at large, maybe it's true to say that in many places in the Western world, Western Europe, North America, Australia, to some extent South Africa, there is a lot of postmodernism in the local churches. Whereas in the church's organization, the church's hierarchy, there is no postmodernism at all. It's very modern. It's one way of doing things. There is no diversity. This is the truth. Walk ye by it. And so we can understand that that causes distrust, that causes difficulty. It's important that both groups realize what is happening, because that is the first step towards trying to deal with it. Now let's look at some of the things that we see as a result of the influx of postmodernism. We see that in many places there is a focus nowadays in the Western world on the local church rather than on the world church. What happens locally is most important for many of the members. That may be true here in the Creve Church. Increasingly, for instance, it's much easier to raise money for a local project than it is for a project far away. There are dangers where the focus is very much on the local church, dangers of congregationalism. This is more a danger in the United States than it is in Europe. Not many local congregations have actually gone their separate ways. But it wouldn't surprise me if you will find that more local congregations will do so. One aspect is, of course, finances. If you have a church of 1,000 members, and you raise together about $1 million a year, and you have two pastors, and you go to the conference and say, well, could we have a third pastor, a youth minister, or a minister of music? And the conference will say, well, no, we have no money, sorry. Then people will say, now wait a minute, we sent you $1 million. Can you not pay more than two salaries? So there is an incentive of trying to organize some things yourself. And you see some local congregations doing that. They encourage still on their tithe envelope. And I've seen that in traveling around. Encourage to give your tithe, but also give for very specific projects in the local church, including financing an additional pastor or whatever their greatest need is. So there is this danger, at least I would still call it a danger, that if the focus is too much on the local church, then that would bring in the temptation of going totally separate. There is a suspicion on the part of many people in the local church with regard to what they are doing up there. Many members of the church, and you know, I have been part of that establishment, so you know, you sometimes hear what people are saying, and probably more is said when you're not hearing. But people who work for the general conference or the division or even the union, maybe even the mission, I don't know. But the question is, now, what in the world do these people do all day? They travel around a bit, you know, and they meet a lot of their time. They have meetings, all kinds of organizational things. But what actually does it mean for us in the local church? Now, those questions are not being raised, certainly not to the same extent, for instance, in Africa. There, by and large, people are proud that they have leaders. If they have a good life, so much the better, because that's what a leader deserves. There is not, at least not to that extent yet, that suspicion or disinterest. There is more and more, and we talked about it in the half hour before we started our meeting this afternoon, there is more and more diversity, theological diversity, but also diversity in other areas. Will that threaten our unity? Will we be able to stay together as a world church? These are all things that have to do with the issue of postmodernity. Because postmodern people don't mind the diversity. In fact, they encourage it. Modern people are wary of that diversity and they see it as a threat. Ecumenical relationships. Hot issue in some of the countries, even in Europe. Should we be members of ecumenical organizations? Should we work together with other churches? If you're modern, you're convinced you have the truth, and these others are just babbling and the daughters of Babylon, then of course you don't want to have anything to do with them. Ecumenism is a threat. If you feel that there is this diversity in Christianity, and we happen to be Seventh-day Adventists, we live with our Adventist tradition, we're happy with our Adventist tradition, but on the other hand, we don't feel that the other people are not genuine Christians, and that we may see them also in the kingdom come. If you have this more wider approach, you're not that worried about having ecumenical relationships. In fact, you would like to have them. So the church is dealing with this on an institutional level. The church needs to deal with these issues on a congregational level. Traditionally, the church is about preaching, is about Bible study, is about doctrine, is about explaining, understanding, arguing. The more postmodern inclined person is looking for a different worship style. Some preaching, yes, but praise, experience, is not just the brain, but it's also the other elements of the human psyche. In the postmodern setting, small groups are being welcomed because there is a greater emphasis on the personal relationships, on being friends, on interacting together. And often, in churches which have a postmodern tendency, there tends to be a blurring of lines between members and non-members. If you have a solidly modern congregation, somebody who is not a baptized member cannot have any official role. Even to play the organ, you know, you have to be a baptized member, according to the church manual. Or for that matter, to help out in the children's Sabbath school, you've got to be a baptized member. That's what the church manual says. So if you have a solidly modern congregation, they'll stick by that. In many congregations nowadays, you find that people come in, they join, they visit, and after some time, they have not been baptized yet, but they say, is there anything I can do? Anywhere where I can help? And they start participating in the life of the church. And after a while, sometimes nobody really is aware of whether that person has actually been baptized, yes or no. Now, we have met that problem in the local church to which we belong. There was a situation where somebody was the de facto leader, not the official, but the de facto leader of the congregation. His wife had not been baptized. I actually didn't know that. But this lady, she was helping out in the children's Sabbath school, or even doing some coordination, I guess. And I must say, I was not responsible for that congregation, but I had never wondered whether the lady was actually baptized or not. Now we have a new minister. A minister who is thoroughly modern. He comes from a different culture, and he cannot understand why the church manual is not being followed. And so he decides that this lady can no longer function in the children's Sabbath school. What happened? Yeah, we haven't seen the lady, nor her husband since. But who is right? If you look at it from a modern perspective, The new pastor was right, because this was not according to the book. According to most of the members, they actually couldn't care less what the book says. This was working fine. They appreciated the people. And of course, eventually the pastor was no longer there, because eventually they revolted against the pastor, because there were other similar incidents. A clash that we experienced there firsthand between a modern approach and a postmodern approach. For a modern person, you're either a member or you're not. A postmodern approach, well, if you enjoy it here and if you want to help, you're more than welcome, and we'll see about the, you know, formalities afterwards. There is also this problem of church discipline. Okay, yeah. There was also this a problem of church discipline. If you have a modern congregation, or a congregation, I should say, mainly consisting of modern people, or a church board mainly consisting of modern people, if there is a problem, you discipline that particular person. But if that person that you are going to discipline is rather postmodern, that person says, well, you know, have fun, but don't really worry. Church discipline no longer functions in the same way as it did in a postmodern setting. Now here we meet a problem, and you know, it's easiest for me to take examples from my own background, my own setting. If you have a church that consists in the Netherlands of 50% of postmodern Dutch people and 50% of recently arrived modern people from some faraway country, then you can bet that these newly arrived people feel that there must be church discipline. And if they are going to have a say, that is what they will enforce. Whereas many people will say, now wait a minute, because what is the intention of church discipline? You want to help people. Do you actually help people by applying this traditional form of church discipline? Well, formally, if you go by the book, the modern people are right. If you're not going by the book, then maybe the postmodern people have a point. So there can be all kinds of problems in the organization, in the local church, because of this issue of how do you think? Do you think in a modern or in a postmodern way? There are now many people within individuals, within our congregations, and maybe some of you belong to this category to some extent, I don't know, who are much more open for the non-rational as you used to be when you first became a Seventh-day Adventist. Much more open also to experience, to the things that are, you know, I mean, that you have a good spiritual time together that satisfies all the different dimensions of your being. There is, on the part of many people who are more or less postmodern, not the same interest in doctrine as there was before. Now, I can still remember how those people who are a little older than I am, and even some of my older generation, could literally fight about the fine points of doctrine. And People could argue about the fine points of doctrine. They could get angry about the fine points of doctrine. And what was important, of course, that you would win the argument. Well, you find that if you're talking with other Christians, they're often not that interested in talking about the different elements of doctrine. Not in the same sense as they were a generation ago. But certainly there are many people in the church now who are not particularly interested in all the doctrinal fine print. But they say, well, you know, we have the main things in common. And what we're here for is that we want to serve the Lord, we want to worship the Lord, and we're happy being Seventh-day Adventists, but if you think a little differently from what I do, then, that really doesn't matter. What is a little bit more difficult is when people come into the church. And many people who are willing to become members eventually, they often want to pick their own package. Now, in the past, if you were giving Bible studies as a pastor, and you were teaching people, then you would cover the subjects in one particular topic, in one particular order that you had in mind. You would go through them, and if there were one or two things that the person didn't really see as clearly as he or she should, then basically at the end, the outcome would often be, well, I guess I will just accept that because really everything that I've heard, most of it, just is fine. Today you will find more and more that people say, now, okay, you have these 28 fundamental beliefs. You know, there's 25 that I agree with. But there are three that I really don't see. Can I be a member even if I don't accept those 3 points? Can I be a member if I still drink a glass of wine? Can I still be a member if I don't accept X, Y, Z? What do you say? In a modern church, no, you cannot become a member. In a postmodern church, maybe that is a little different. What do you say? Depends. It depends. That is what I would say. It depends what the 3 points are. But there you also have a problem. Because the very fact that I would say that some points are more important than other points, well, truth is truth, isn't it? Who am I to decide that one point is more important than another point? Well, I've argued that at length with some people who were thoroughly modern. And then, I would say, well, are you telling me that a correct view on the millennium is as important as believing in Jesus Christ as your Savior? Well, if you put it that way, people are not so sure, but still, they don't feel comfortable with that kind of questions. But I can tell you there are differences in the way we deal with doctrines. If I leave this church hall smoking a cigar, I will soon be in more problem than when I deny the Trinity. As a minister, I can deny the doctrine of the Trinity. And the most that will happen to me is that somebody will say, well, don't preach on it. But the moment I walk out smoking a cigar, I'm in serious trouble. So it does seem that we do make some differences here and there. But anyway, this is increasingly an issue we are facing. Postmodern people who say, yes, we would like to be members, but on our own conditions. Well, there are lots of challenges for our church as an institution. I could mention a few more. There is, interestingly enough, less interest in the church in having a career in the hierarchy of the church. In the past, for many pastors, the deepest longing of their heart would want to be a president. Nowadays, in quite a few fields, it's actually not that easy to find a president. As I have recently noticed. Because that's why I'm now in Belgium. Because some people say, well, why would I want to be a president? It's only trouble. And if you didn't know, there is not that much in it for you as far as finances is concerned. So you don't have to do it to become rich quickly. Because we know you have become rich by being president for 10 years, but that's an exception. Generous congregation. Yes, yes. There is less interest in being part of that. In fact, in the United States, for a pastor to have optimum success in his career is not to become a conference president or a union president, but is to become the pastor of a large institutional church. Be the pastor of Andrews University Church, be the pastor of Loma Linda University Church, or you know, similar things. That is much more interesting nowadays to, if there is such a thing as a career pastor, than being part of the administrative hierarchy. People are far less interested in global plans. In the years that I was working as the union president in the Netherlands, go to the meetings of the General Conference and of the division, and there were these glorious plans that were developed. And then I was supposed to go home, call my ministers together, and tell them, this is what we are now going to do, and this is supposed to be our quota. Now, if I would try to do that, and I'm sure it's the same here, you try to do that, they would say, well, that's interesting, we'll watch you do it. Because that is not how we like to work, being more postmodern. We don't get enthusiastic about all these things. Yes, we will use some things here and there, things that we feel, resources that we feel we can use, but we'll do it in our own way. And we feel we ought to be allowed to do that. Now, just a couple of months ago, the Netherlands Union asked me to go to Slovenia to a meeting of publishing leaders for the European continent. And one of the things that we were told we should do was that we should have an evangelistic publications in all our different languages. And it was to be this book, and it was to be translated in such and such a way. We should use this particular layout, and well, everything, of course, publish it at the very same time, because that's the idea, we were explained, of a division-wide project. So there was very little enthusiasm when our General Conference brethren explained this plan. And I felt a bit sorry for them. And so next morning, I suggested that we have breakfast together. And I said, did you notice, brethren, that you didn't have a very strong positive reaction? Yeah, they had noticed. But they couldn't understand. I said, well, have you noticed that, first of all, a number of countries are not even represented at this meeting? No, they hadn't noticed. I said, well, some of the major countries are not here. Well, why would that be? Well, brethren, because they did not think that what was going to be discussed here would be relevant to them. And that is now the question that you have to face when you come to Europe. Are your plans relevant, and can your ideas be adopted by the countries in their own special ways serving their needs? Well, they said, look, we have been elected at a General Conference session. We're coming from countries where we had success in our approach. We have been elected to duplicate that success in other parts of the world. And so, why don't you listen to us, and why don't you try it? Conclusion: a totally modern approach that fell totally deaf on postmodern ears. And so you can see that this creates a problem. I don't go through all these different things, but there was a time, it was actually in the late 1920s, when for every dollar that was given in tithe, 60 cents were given in mission offerings. Ever since, the ratio has changed. What is the ratio today? It's probably about 2 cents for every tithe dollar. And that has not changed. Actually, the percentage has gone down. The gross amount has remained somewhat static because of currency situations and other things. But the interest that people have in really sacrificing for mission that we once had has consistently gone down as we have become more postmodern. The interest is local, not far away. It's not the world church, whatever we say. Well, there are all kinds of challenges. How do we stay together theologically? How do we stay together in policy? How do we find a consensus in different kinds of things? That is this diversity that we are facing. How do we deal with that? And so many people say that we are dealing in the church with the problem liberals and conservatives. And, you know, just using those words, even though I don't like them because they are very unsatisfactory. But I would argue that it's not just liberal versus conservative, but it's modern versus postmodern. It is not just a matter of differences in our theological ideas. It is a difference in our overall approach to things and our overall way of thinking. The modern Adventist, see whether you know some, or whether you are maybe one yourself to some extent. Modern Adventist demands certainties. Truth is truth. The modern Adventist will defend historical positions. This is what the pioneers believed, so we should stay with it. Doctrinal purity. It's either truth or it is not. A very strong emphasis on eschatology. Why don't the preachers preach on the Daniel and the Revelation? Anti-ecumenical. You know, watch Rome. Watch the other spiritual powers, because they may be friendly today, but one day. Emphasis on unity, uniformity. We have rules, we have regulations, we have a church manual. strong role for the organization and policy. Recognize this type of Adventism? Then, there is the postmodern Adventist, who has less interest in the fine print of doctrine, will allow for some diversity, is not too worried about the fact that authority functions in a different way from what it used to do, thinks differently about the relative value of organizations like GC, division, union, even the role of the pastor. In many churches of a very modern type, in particular when you are dealing with other cultures, the pastor has a different role. We have a church in Amsterdam consisting of Canadians. You also have a Canadian church, I believe, in London and maybe in a few other places. This is a church in Amsterdam, about 200 members. When I go there, I don't have to worry about a parking place because they make sure there is one for me. I don't have to carry my own briefcase because that's what they do for me. And of course, there is a hot meal after the service. And when there is a hot meal for all church members, because I don't have to sit with the hoi polloi, but I can just sit separately somewhere with the local pastor and enjoy my meal from actually porcelain while the others eat from paper plates. Because I'm the pastor. Now, if I would try to duplicate that in most other local churches in the Netherlands, I wouldn't get very far. When we left the Netherlands in 1984, everybody called me Pastor Bruinsma. I came back 18 years later. Everybody called me Reinder. I must admit, I had to get used to that. But you soon get used to it. And it doesn't mean that you're less respected. But it definitely makes a difference. Today, a pastor in a more postmodern setting does not have his authority because he's been elected or because he's been appointed, but he has to earn the respect of the congregation. And if you don't earn the respect, then, well, it's too bad, but you've lost it. But it's not because it's simply having the function. So that is very different, the way authority functions in a postmodern setting from a modern setting. Among postmodern Adventists, there is much more interest in community, in doing social things together. There is emphasis on experience, much more openness to work together, to learn from others. But there is also more hesitancy among postmodern Adventists towards total commitment. Do you want to be an elder? Or a church or a leader in the Sabbath school? Yes, okay, I will do it from time to time, but I find it difficult to commit myself for every week. Have you noticed that is sometimes a problem? This total commitment, also when it comes to being baptized, we have many people now in the more postmodern churches who take a long time being baptized. In our local church, there was a gentleman who recently got baptized after he had been kind of coming along for 25 years. But he had never come to the point until there was some kind of incentive. People said, well, why haven't you been baptized? Well, actually, once I had a person whom I asked, why haven't you been baptized? Well, that person said, the last 10 years, nobody has asked me. It is strange, but this is reality that some people find it very difficult to make that decision and to cross the line from belonging somewhat to total commitment. The postmodern Adventist also has more openness towards different lifestyles. And that may well be the most difficult of all. I don't know how it is in Britain, but in some European countries, social drinking of wine, beer, is becoming more and more accepted in Adventist circles. Caffeine-containing beverages, it is no longer an issue in most European countries. That doesn't mean that everybody drinks coffee, tea, etc., but it has ceased to be, by and large, the bone of contention that it once was. Now, just 10 days ago, I went to a ministers' meeting in France, and I had been told, look, in France they are much more conservative than they are in Holland. So I was afraid that during the interval I would not have a cup of coffee. I need not have feared. There was plenty of coffee. And to my surprise, most of the ministers were drinking it. This is certainly a change that has come about. But among many of the modern Seventh-day Adventists, that is still a no-no. And of course, you don't have people in Britain who live together without being married. But in many of the European countries, I can tell you, that has become, among the more postmodern youth, more rule than the exception. And then how do you deal with that? And, of course, there are other lifestyle issues. The postmodern Adventist will take a much more relaxed attitude. You are making your own decisions. Yes, there is a certain consensus, but we are not too rough on you, not too hard on you, if you make another decision for yourself. Now, when we look at modern versus postmodern, who is right? I think that is a very unfruitful question. We have to recognize this particular issue. We have to recognize that this is the reality we are facing. We have increasingly postmodern sentiments out in the world around us. People that we have to reach with our gospel message somehow. If you want to reach anyone, you have to know something of their culture. You have to know their language. We have increasingly the same issues facing us in the church. Now, we know that when we move to another country as missionaries or in whatever capacity, that we will have to immerse ourselves in the culture of where we go. And often it includes learning a language. If we want to connect with people in our society who are non-churched, who are secular, if we want to communicate with people within our church who are increasingly postmodern, we don't have to agree with everything they say and do. But we will have to take the trouble to be interested in their culture. We have to find out what makes them tick. We have to respect them for where they are and what they think. We don't have to agree with them. But if we want to talk about the gospel and have any measure of success, that's what we need to do. We will have to be prepared for the fact that dealing with postmodern secular people is a very long, worn-out process. In some countries, from the moment a person comes in contact with the church and is baptized, it's an average of a couple of months. Even 50 years ago, probably, in Britain, certainly in the Netherlands, you could have evangelistic campaigns. People would actually come. They would have enough background to know what you were talking about. And usually after a few months, maybe 6 months, there would be the first baptism. And then maybe a little later you would have a second baptism. When I teach a class at Newbold on the issues of postmodernity, I ask the question to the students who come from all different countries and ethnic backgrounds. Tell me, how long does it take where you come from? On the average, the moment when a person makes first contact and the person is a committed baptized member. Without any exception, people tell me it takes longer than it used to. When you talk to the people in the countries in what is what used to be Eastern Europe, today most like to be called Central Europe, you ask them and say, how long does it take? They will tell you it takes longer than it used to. A lot longer. You ask the Scandinavians, how long does it take? They say an average of 7 or 8 years on the average. Dealing with postmodern people is a challenge. And it takes a long time. Richard Rice, one of our writers in America, has written a book called Behaving, Believing, Belonging. It's a very interesting book in which he argues that the order has changed. It used to be believing, behaving, belonging. Today, belonging is the first thing. People must have a feeling that they're welcome, that they listen to you, that this is a place where they have come, where they like to be. Then, over the years, they will change their behavior in many ways. Sometimes maybe not as much or as quick as you would like to. And they will gradually want to know more about the belief system of these people that they now belong to. But it's belonging that comes first. So, if you talk to these people, forget to make your own agenda. The time that you could say, now this is the list of topics that we are going to deal with, that time has passed. The people will set the agenda. They will have questions. They will have topics they want to discuss. You don't know the answer? That's all right. You try to manipulate them, they're gone. We talked about it this morning in the sermon. So, when we are dealing with Daniel and the Revelation, and we're trying to talk to these people about what Daniel and the Revelation may mean, outside the church, inside the church. It won't work. If you say, now, we start with Revelation 1 and we'll go by chapter and I'll explain to you all the symbols and all the historical applications, etc. You will have lost your audience in no time. There may be some. But there are different ways, I believe, of dealing with the great, important content of these books. So that even people who are more postmodern inclined will see something of value in there. And that's all we are trying to do these days. Yesterday, I said there are different approaches to the book of Revelation, to Daniel. I'm not going to tell you which approach would be the best. If you want to know, I believe that all these different approaches have some value. And I see some light in the certainly historical approach, but also in some of the other approaches. I think there's more than one way to deal with that. But that is not the main thing that we want to discuss. My burden for this weekend is, look at how people are thinking, how their thinking has changed outside the church, often inside the church, and how can we still make Daniel and the Revelation present truth to that particular audience. And so let's hope that we can do that tomorrow morning, and I hope there are some going to be here tomorrow morning to listen to what we'll have to say. And I think that is where we'll leave it at now, and we'll have time for questions.